All right, let's go to our broadcast partners. First one is in Washington, D.C. We're talking about Ken Timmerman, who covers geopolitical activities for us. Ken, much to talk about. By the way, I do understand that you had some meeting time with a former ambassador to the United Nations, John Bolton. Secret subjects, or can you share any of that with us?
Yes, I was meeting today in Washington, D.C. with Ambassador John Bolton. Part of it was about Iran, the immigration bill. We are both deeply concerned with the progress that the Islamic Republic of Iran has made towards nuclear weapons capability and the ineffectiveness of U.S. policy. I believe, and Ambassador Bolton shares that belief with me, that we have to move beyond sanctions to a policy that would support the people of Iran in their struggle for freedom in that country. So that was a very important meeting, and as you know, Ambassador Bolton supported me quite actively in my campaign for Congress, and we remain very good friends and allies on this and many other issues.
Boy, I wish I could have been a little fly on the wall listening to you guys. That's two of the greats, two of my favorite guys, talking about geopolitical activities. Well, I am almost positive you talked about what's going on in the United States Congress and how the liberal media is trying to spin the Benghazi scandal to protect Team Obama. What about that? This is ridiculous, and it goes right at the heart of the security of our nation, doesn't it?
Well, it does, and here's what's I think very interesting is that at the beginning of this, in other words, in the immediate aftermath of the murder of our diplomats and the special forces and CIA operative officer who was in Benghazi, in the immediate aftermath, the goal was to protect President Obama and the administration, but it very soon, very, very quickly became, how do we protect Hillary Clinton? That was done. We now are learning from the hearings this week convened by Congressman Darrell Issa. It was done by Victoria Nuland, who was Hillary Clinton's spokesperson, who sent a number of emails that are now coming to light. We found out that Victoria Nuland demanded that the White House and the intelligence community delete all references to al-Qaeda, to Islamic extremists or Islamic terrorists, and especially to warnings before the September 11th, 2012 attack on Benghazi because, and these were her words, because it would show that the State Department had neglected warnings ahead of time, and we don't want to give them that kind of ammunition. I mean, this is absolutely outrageous. I think it's going to do a deep damage to Hillary Clinton in her aspirations to run for president in 2016. And if it doesn't do deep damage to her, it will show you how deeply in bed with the Democrat Party the national media in this country has become.
Well, the national media does have a responsibility. They are the fourth column, and they need to be holding all political leaders to an account of some type on what they may be doing across the aisle, both Democrat and Republican. I'm not saying one side or the other should be spared from the media, but the media is not sparing the Democratic Party, as you're saying. And folks, if you're eavesdropping on this conversation, this is a program about Bible prophecy. The number one power in the world is the United States of America. And if we can be lied to from the White House down, we need to understand the implications that that'll have spreading all across America. Well, let's go on with other issues, Ken. The Iranians are threatening to respond against Israel for the alleged Israeli Air Force attack on Syria. Now, Israel, at this point, has neither denied or confirmed they were responsible for the attack, but the Iranians are getting in the game, and maybe they ought not to be in there.
Well, the Iranians, let's not forget, have been the biggest supporter of Bashar al-Assad, the Syrian dictator. They had sent Revolutionary Guards troops to Syria. They are training Syrian paramilitary and anti-riot squad troops in their tactics at putting down demonstrations. So they have a lot invested in keeping Assad in power. And Israel's military strike, which I think is pretty clear, did take place last weekend against a military factory that was producing or stockpiling, it's not sure which, these long-range Fateh 110 missiles, which, by the way, I saw, Jimmy, in 2006. They already had, Hezbollah already had some of them in 2006 during that war. And these are missiles which allow them to reach Haifa from Lebanon and points further south. Israel struck a very serious blow against Syria and against Hezbollah in that military strike. The Iranians saw it, and they are threatening now to retaliate, probably through terrorist attacks, as a way of showing that they will not allow themselves to be attacked. In other words, you're seeing a kind of Middle East version of deterrence and chicken mixed together.
I like that phrase, deterrence and the chicken, and we're not talking about a meal. Talk to me about what Israel's strike against Syria may have done. It kind of blew the conventional Arab thinking. I mean, the Arab world really wants to deal with Bashar Assad, but they're not sure they wanted Israel to do it.
Well, that's what's kind of ironic in this. If there's a silver lining in this horrible situation in Syria, it may be that it has thrown the Arab world in political turmoil and exposed some of their internal contradictions. The Arab nationalists have, you know, for 60 years tried to gin up this gutter reaction against Israel, against a Jewish state in the Middle East on so-called Muslim land. And yet at the same time, the main Arab countries, from Saudi Arabia, from Qatar, which is only a main country because it's financing revolutions around the world, especially those two, are trying to get rid of Bashar al-Assad. And so now they find themselves objectively allied with Israel as Israel strikes the Assad regime. You see this in the Twitter universe and on Facebook, kind of in the social media, where you have all these commentaries on the ground, especially in Syria, from local people saying, gee, I thought I was supposed to hate Israel and love and love Assad and love the Syrian army, but I'm being attacked by the Syrian army, and Israel is coming to our rescue. So it has thrown things a little bit topsy-turvy, and frankly, that's all for the good.
Yeah, an enigma going on in the Middle East. Ken, we've talked about this next subject quite extensively. You've been into the Middle East, especially into northern Iraq. You dealt with the issue, mass exodus of Christians from across the Muslim world, unprecedented in history, from one end of the Muslim world to the other, even into Europe, into Bosnia, which is somewhat of an Islamic nation. The Christians are leaving in mass. Israel is an example of it. They're in Bethlehem and Nazareth. Boy, this is something that the world needs to deal with, is it not?
Well, yes, and actually it's unprecedented in modern times, but let's not forget, this is how Islam conquered the Middle East and the Holy Land when they first seized power in the 7th century. In the 7th century after Christ, there were 300 Christian bishops in the Middle East. 3 centuries later, after Islam had conquered the region, there were 3 left. So we have seen this mass exodus before. It is what comes before the slaughter and bloodshed of Islamic rule. And it's happening not just in Egypt. It's happening not just in Iraq, where I have been reporting from, and you and I have talked about that on air, as you alluded to it, too. But it's happening in places like Ethiopia, which has been a Christian nation. It's happening in Mali, where 200,000 Christians have been driven out by the jihadis who've come into the northern part of that country. It's going on all throughout northern Africa and the Middle East.
Is there a possible solution at this time in history?
Yes, there is. And the first solution is for the church as a body to stand up to defend the faith and to defend individual Christians. And if you know a mission organization around you, if you have people at your own church who are supporting a mission in the Middle East, nothing could be more timely, nothing could be more important than doing it, whether it's schools in Jordan or Christian schools in Iraq, whether it's helping to plant churches in Iraqi Kurdistan. We can help staunch the flow, but we have to help Christians anchor themselves in their historic homelands, and the only way we can do that is by help create security on the ground, which has to be done through political means.
Ken Timmerman in Washington, D.C., with a potpourri of geopolitical activities that we are always able to discuss with him, because when we make contact, he has information that we need to know, and that's the reason we always have him on the air with us. Ken, thank you so very much. Appreciate taking some time out of your busy schedule there in Washington, D.C. to be with us. We appreciate it. We'll talk again next week.
Well, I appreciate that, Jimmy, and I'm actually speaking to you in the shadow of the U.S. Capitol building.
Wow. Wow. On the cell phone, in action, Ken Timmerman in Washington.